You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are talking
while married.
So it looks like President Trump and America is going through some fallout as a direct result of President Trump's, wise decision to take out the Iranian evil terrorist General Soleimani with a drone strike this week.
Well, some people in this country, Ron, just they can't accept anything that President Trump does. And if he says A, they say Z. You know, there's nothing that he does to please them.
Well, you know, the hypocrisy is just absolutely amazing. So we take out a guy that we should have taken out 20 years ago when he was first labeled as a terrorist. All right, and nobody's touched this guy. Certainly the Obama administration and Joe Biden never touched this guy, but they wanted to reach out and touch Osama bin Laden. But that was a huge victory. But taking out someone who I would argue is probably every bit, if not more evil than Osama bin Laden in the numbers of people that he was personally involved in killing, all of a sudden that's a bad thing and brings us on the so-called brink of war with Iran.
Well, and you have the Chicken Little sky is falling syndrome here, right? That, oh my gosh, now this is going to happen and now that's going to happen and now everything's going to go to pieces here.
No, I absolutely agree. And one of the things that really bothers me about this is that we're actually getting not only the usual liberal Democrats assailing the President of the United States and disagreeing, but we're getting a few moderate Republicans that are doing the same thing. And I just don't get these people. You know, one of the things that I think is fascinating about the Democratic Party is they know how to circle the wagons and support each other even when they are, you know, way off base and extremely wrong. But when the Republicans are in office and a Republican president does something that I think is rightfully done for national security, even the Republicans, some Republicans will turn on the president. When he has the constitutional authority to do this, and it was absolutely the right thing to do.
Well, again, I just think that some people will not agree with anything that he does. Now, if it were reversed, and like you said, when Obama took out Osama bin Laden, and that was after waiting a huge amount of time around that table to decide if they actually should do it when they had him, you know, right in their crosshairs. But they ultimately did. I mean, he was lauded as a hero for doing that. And President Trump definitely will never get that same respect from any Democrats. We are just so completely divided on everything. And it's like I said, there's nothing that President Trump will do now or in the next 4 years or 5 years that he would be in office that they will agree with. And it's just a shame because really they mislead the American people on the facts. And I know that Senator Lee was really unhappy about the intelligence briefing, and he didn't like the intelligence briefing about why they took him out. So now he's got a different opinion, and I think that there's maybe three senators that have a different opinion.
Well, you know what? Let me give you my opinion. I don't care. That's my opinion. I don't care what the intelligence briefing said. This guy was a bad guy. He was an ultra bad guy. We had him on the terrorist list for people to bump off for 20 years, and finally we had an opportunity to bump this guy off. I could care less what the intelligence briefing said. He's a bad guy. He killed thousands and thousands of people. He killed almost 700 Americans directly responsible for killing American soldiers, and then exporting terrorism to Syria, to Libya, to Beirut, Lebanon, to all these, and to Iraq, all these different countries in completely destabilizing the Middle East. Why shouldn't we kill him if he's a target?
Well, I totally agree with you. And, you know, the fact that people are arguing about it is, it's just what's going to happen. But when you have somebody like Ilhan Omar, who says that she has PTSD over this, that just makes me sick. And the fact that she's giggling while she's talking about our dead American soldiers makes me sick. I really, really hope that she does not get reelected, nor any of those people in the squad. I always forget the name of that.
Yeah. You know, the thing that bothers, there's so many things that bother me about Omar. I think she's a total fraud. I think she should have never been elected. It was a huge mistake. But the Somalis in her district, because she's got little Somalia over there,
right?
Okay, in her district, and they voted for her. Those people had better wake up, because she's done nothing to help them in their district so far, and all she does is stir the pot. And now throwing down this phony baloney PTSD card, I'm a victim, all right? I'm a victim. I've got PTSD in the face of the tens of thousands of veterans from all our wars, if it's not hundreds of thousands of veterans from all of our wars that sincerely have PTSD is just offensive.
And she is pro the anti-Israeli organization. I think it's BDS.
Right.
Yeah, she's pro that organization. So she doesn't want us to fight with Iran, but she does want us to fight with Israel. So she has no credibility in my book, and she shouldn't have credibility in anybody's book in America.
No, I totally agree. One of the things that bothers me, again, another level of what bothers Dr. Ron. Okay, mm-hmm. So another thing that bothers me, Linda, is the fact that the Democrats don't see globally. They don't see that when you do not support this country, when you should be supporting it, you give a impression to our enemy that we are completely divided and, you know, President Trump's on his way out, or you belittle the president, or you try to cut his legs out from under him when he's trying to protect this country and protect national security, and you give the wrong impression to the enemy.
Well, they give the wrong impression on how we see it, Ron, but how they see it is they want that impression given. You know, the thing that has happened from this, it's always amazing to me to hear these pundits and these liberal Democrats say, okay, here's what's going to happen, and oh my God, and the sky's falling, right? But what has happened? Trump showed his might. He showed that you don't attack our embassy or there's going to be consequences.
You don't kill Americans.
You don't kill Americans or there's going to be consequences. And they got the consequences. But it was a big consequence because that guy, Soleimani, was very important.
Oh, the number two guy.
In Iran.
And with Khomeini having cancer, he could very well have been the next leader of Iran.
Well, sure.
You can just imagine that.
Yeah. And so what has happened from that is Iran launched a very weak attack that was just meant to show their people that they're fighting back because they felt like they had a safe face. 22% of their missiles didn't work at all, so that doesn't speak very well of them. They're probably not being able to be maintained. And they didn't kill anybody or harm anybody, just took out a few, you know, things on the ground. Okay, but then Iran said that they were stepping back from retaliation. And Trump did not respond in kind to their attack. He was very measured, and he didn't attack back.
And he reached out, an olive leaf,
and said, let's talk. I'm always open to negotiation. Let's redo this nuclear deal. And, you know, I mean, this is not what anybody expected.
Well, the thing is that this is the process of de-escalation, and it's completely contrary. If you listen to the Democrats, if you listen to the media, liberal pundits, they will tell you, well, Trump is escalating. No, he's not escalating. He did exactly what he said he was going to do. Don't harm Americans, or there's going to be consequences for it. Unlike Obama back in 2009 or something, when he drew the so-called red line in the sand with Syria after the chemical, you know, weapons attacks. And then what did Assad do? He attacks and kills, you know, 10,000 people with chemical weapons, and we never did anything. What that did was embolden the enemy. And now with President Trump saying, don't do this. If you do this, there's going to be consequences. And then, bam, right away, there's serious consequences. That really scared the bejesus out of the Iranians.
You know, if
and that's de-escalation.
If you take this into his personal life and his business life before he ever became president, his method is exactly how you should be a good parent, and his method is exactly how you should be a good businessman. You say what you're going to do, and you do what you said. And that is that. If more parents and more business people would do that, they would be ever so much more successful within their businesses and their families. I love how he handled this. And the whole naysayer thing, where everybody is, you know, saying that the sky is falling, is just not true. And they're missing the whole point of how he thinks and how he acts. And now they're seeing what happens when you actually lead.
Well, yeah, you actually do what you see. You have a leader that does what he says he's going to do. And I don't know who's working in the intelligence community in Iran and who's doing the psychological profile of Trump. But I agree with you 100%. They probably never read The Art of the Deal.
Okay. They probably should.
I did. Okay. And they probably have not paid a lot of attention to Trump, okay, because he's a counterpuncher. He does exactly what he says he's going to do, and usually more, okay, and that's it. And he leads from the front. He's not scared of anybody.
Well, you have traitors like John Kerry going over there and saying, don't do anything, just wait till Trump gets out of office. I mean, he's working against the president behind his back and against America, too.
Well, and there are several other people that are doing the same thing. And my thoughts are that's traitorous actions. And those people in the least should be placed on the do not fly list. And we shouldn't let them leave our country for countries, you know, such as Iran or North Korea or any of these places where we have belligerents.
I say let them go, but just don't let them come back.
Okay, I'd let you do that. You know, let's stay on the same topic, but switch gears slightly and talk about the Ukrainian Boeing 737 that went down. That now it's looking like the Iranians shot an aircraft down that was just leaving their airfield.
Yeah, it seems like they forgot somehow to close their airport and their airspace while they were lobbing missiles over at our soldiers, which is a huge tactical error.
Well, and this is these guys. And you know, I'm going to be somewhat bold in my comment here, but I'm going to say there's another way of looking at President Trump, and that is that President Trump probably saved the lives of tens of thousands of Iranians, okay, by what he did. He probably saved a lot of people's lives. Because speaking of de-escalation, look what could have happened if the Iranians had struck the base and killed our military personnel. Can you imagine what the response would have been when President Trump is telling the Iranians, we have 52 different sites in our crosshairs, and you kill an American, and there will be severe repercussions for that. I could see some of those sites as being cruise missile sites, launching sites, their oil refineries, their aircraft, in other words, their air force, and their navy. I will tell you what, you take out the navy, you take out the air force, and you get regime change. I'm telling you, you get regime change, because there's no way that standing army that they have could fight a successful civil war without having material support. Okay.
Yeah, I think there may be changes coming. But back to the aircraft, I mean, that was just a disaster that they apparently shot down an aircraft leaving from their own airport and killed a whole lot of Canadians and Iranians.
Yeah,
so they killed
some,
their own people,
right.
and
international.
Right.
Thank God no Americans on that aircraft. I think there were 69 Canadians. I was really surprised how many Canadians was on that Ukrainian aircraft. Now, so far, the eyewitnesses of that aircraft going down, actually we get some really good comments from pilots and people that were in a plane that was actually above it. And doing, you know, circling to either come into the airport or had gone out of the airport. But there was another commercial airliner above this airliner.
Wow, so they dodged a bullet, literally.
Oh, well, they did. And they are reporting what they saw with the Ukrainian airliner that was shot down. And this airliner was climbing to 8,000, it was at the 8,000 foot level when all of a sudden it was struck, and it was definitely struck in an engine. I don't know if it was port or starboard engine, but don't forget, the 737 is a very viable aircraft. I mean, we fly 737s all the time, okay? This aircraft with Boeing airframe was only 4 years old, which is a relatively new aircraft, and that aircraft, if an engine goes out, they can completely lose an engine, and it can still return and land properly, okay, even with an entire engine gone. And I've actually seen one that had an engine in America. One of the aircraft lost an entire engine, just completely fell off of the wing, and that aircraft successfully landed on an airfield without any casualties whatsoever. But what the people in the aircraft above were saying and below were saying is that that aircraft started to fall apart right in the air. And then, of course, the air crew could not successfully bring that aircraft back for a successful landing. And when it hit the ground, it was so full of fuel that it just exploded into a million pieces. But the black boxes survived, and the Iranians are not allowing the Boeing Corporation to open those black boxes and look at the data.
Yeah, that's pretty telling, isn't it? You know, the thing that really disturbs me about this whole thing, besides that happened at all, is that we again have Americans blaming our president for the death of these people on the airplane. They say that that it was a tit for tat that got these people in the middle, caught in the crossfire. There was no crossfire.
That's
okay?
Exactly right.
The only people that fired anything were the Iranians.
That's exactly
so,
right.
So I'm just disgusted with Buttigieg and some of the other people that are blaming our president for this airliner being down.
Well, I think people like Buttigieg, he's a very desperate politician. He's a very naive politician. He's just a mayor. He has no real leadership experience, and he doesn't know what he's talking about with regards to military affairs or national security.
As we say, let the silent voices be heard. Shadow banning, editing, censorship, blocking, and adherence to political correctness are seen as serious threats to our God-given right to free speech. Suppressing free speech, the very cornerstone of our society, is not in the best interest of our listeners, readers, and those who provide our content. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. If you'd like to find out what forensic criminologists really do in the field, and you're tired of the false narratives about law enforcement and want to unpack the cases that I've worked throughout the nation, then please pick up a copy of my new book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police,
on sale right now at Amazon.com. That's the truth behind the Black Lives Matter movement and the war on police at Amazon.com.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about Nancy.
You're talking about Nancy Pelosi?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
So Nancy is the master negotiator, right? She's actually a brilliant politician. Unfortunately, that's just all she is she's a brilliant politician. But, you know, there's a couple things that she is doing here that are really interesting. The first thing, of course, is holding up the articles of impeachment from being sent to the Senate. And Trey Gowdy wrote an article which I thought was really interesting and made me think a lot, and I think he's got a really good point.
Well, since I didn't read the article, why don't you share with me what you learned from it?
So Trey Gowdy says that they already know that Trump's going to be reelected. They already pretty much are giving into that. But what they don't want is they don't want the Senate to be controlled by Republicans. So that their purpose here is not so much to get the president impeached, because they know that that's not going to happen. But they want to get the senators that are, they think, at risk, which is Cory Gardner, Martha McSally, Tom Tillis, Susan Collins, and Joni Ernst, from being reelected. And they want to take over the leadership in the Senate. Therefore, if and when Trump gets reelected, he will never be able to do anything. His hands will be tied with everything, because they'll have a majority in the House and a majority in the Senate. And that is what Nancy's going for.
You know, that's a great theory, and it actually makes a lot of sense. I want to disagree with you on a couple of things, though. And that is, I tell you, I think that Nancy Pelosi is like kind of wily as a fox. However, I would disagree with you in calling her a brilliant politician. I don't think she's a brilliant politician, because a brilliant politician would not get the Democratic Party into the position that the Democratic Party is in right now. And a brilliant politician would not get the Congress majority into the position where they are right now, where they look like a bunch of fools. And the only people that are really going in their direction are Kool-Aid drinkers. I don't think Kool-Aid drinkers are going to win in 2020. Okay, so I absolutely agree with part of what you're saying. I think President Trump is going to win in 2020, and I think he's going to win by larger margins than he did before. As a matter of fact, I think if anything is the case, I think it's the Democrats that may lose congressional seats coming up in the next election.
Well, I agree with you.
And that's going to mm-hmm. hurt them.
Now, I agree with you. And I think that this is their strategy. So here's the rest of the strategy. Nancy Pelosi is withholding the papers from the Senate.
Yes.
Why? Because before she turns them over to the Senate, she wants people to be on record about some things. And she thinks that these particular Republicans that I mentioned, that their vote will matter. So if they support the president, then she thinks that they have a bigger chance of being
voted out.
And here's the thinking. She's going to force the Senate. I'm not saying this is going to happen. I'm saying this is part of what the strategy would be.
Okay.
So that she would force the Senate to go ahead and make a statement as to things like calling witnesses and those types of things. Because right now, the way that it would be is that they don't intend to call witnesses. They intend to just get this over with. She wants these people to be on record because she thinks it will hurt them. So that would be her strategy. And the strategy is not going to be to impeach Trump, because it's not going to happen, but it's going to be to change the direction of the Senate for the next election.
Okay, well, I follow that, and I'm not saying I disagree with that. I'm just saying that I think that there's going to be some huge issues, because remember, constitutionally, Nancy Pelosi, her function is gone now. Okay, so her function in the Congress is to, you know, basically try the case, right? To get an indictment, which is
correct.
Another word for impeachment, is an indictment
correct.
Against the president. All right. But the trier of fact, the jury, is the Senate. And I think, and remember we were just talking the other day, kind of making an analogy, if it was a civil case, there's something called summary judgment, right? In other words, you have not brought a triable fact forward to let this court case proceed. And even though the Democrats and the media believe that they've done enough, well, we got him impeached, we voted for impeachment, that doesn't mean anything, okay? That doesn't mean anything at all. That just means that, you know, you get to hand over articles of impeachment to the Senate, but the Senate is the jury and controlled by a real judge who is supposed to be an objective facts judge, and that's John Roberts, who's the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. I think that if Roberts was really neutral, and that's what he's really got to be, he's got to be neutral, and he's got to be a person that recognizes objective facts from supposition, from speculation, from the subjective, all right, which is an opinion, a presumption, you know, then if Mitch McConnell, where Mitch McConnell's coming from, this case is dead on arrival, because what the Senate will do is vote and say that there was not a case here and approach John Roberts and say, the Congress has not made their case, Your Honor, and we want the case dismissed on its face. Now, let's talk about witnesses for a second. And Nancy Pelosi is saying, well, the Senate needs to have witnesses. They need to have witnesses. Oh, wait a minute, Nancy. You had a prolonged opportunity to provide real fact witnesses to the impeachment trial, and you did not do it. You had the opportunity to present fact witnesses, and you didn't do it. It is not the job of the Senate to produce fact witnesses. They are the trier of fact, okay? That they listen to the case. They don't put a separate case on with fact witnesses, and I don't think that generally the American people even understand that.
Yeah. Well, another thought, and this came from one of Nancy's aides apparently, is that back on December 5th, John Dean was on CNN.
Oh my God. You remember John Dean,
sure,
right? Richard Nixon,
yep.
John Dean, he was part of the Watergate defendants,
sure,
as a matter of fact.
Well, what he said was maybe she shouldn't turn over the papers. And this aide says that this is where Nancy originally got the idea, because if she turns over the papers to the Senate, then the Senate is going to be acting on it, and then they are going to
dismiss it.
But if she never sends them, he remains, in her estimation, impeached forever. He's never vindicated.
No, wait a minute.
No, I'm saying what was said.
Right.
Okay, now, what can happen and would happen is that the Senate will go ahead and try it without the papers and dismiss it anyway. But that was just something that was on her mind. So she's got all kinds of things, little tricks up her sleeve that she's trying here. But I don't think that any of them are going to work. Now, the second thing about Nancy is that she just did this whole war powers resolution in the Congress.
Oh, yeah. That's interesting. That's coming up.
Yes. Well, it's really worthless, right?
It is.
It means nothing.
That's correct.
So, again, we're wasting the time of the Congress, instead of doing the people's work, on doing something just to try to make President Trump look bad and just wasting everybody's time.
Okay, but you remember when we started out our conversation and I talked about how the Democrats and the Democratic Congress act in such a way against the President of the United States that it emboldens our enemies? So when you tell the enemy that what you're trying to do is limit President Trump's ability to defend this country.
Handcuff the president.
That's exactly right. You embolden our enemies. You do nothing to help the United States. You do nothing to help the security of the United States of America. You do everything to hurt the security of Americans. Of Americans.
Right.
Not President Trump. Okay, of Americans. You hurt our national security
and undercut
the president.
And endanger our soldiers.
Exactly.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's a horrible thing for them to do. Listen, this is not going to go anywhere. okay, because the Senate is going to get rid of this case. Nancy should have brought together her fact witnesses if she had them. You know, the John Boltons, the Mnuchins, all of these people that they could have brought forward through the power of subpoena.
Yes.
And they did not.
Correct.
Okay,
they chose not to.
They chose not to. So the first question someone needs to ask is, well, why didn't they? The next thing is, if she holds back, and it was interesting that Dianne Feinstein, who is such a liberal senator and from Nancy Pelosi's same district, San Francisco Bay Area, even you've got Dianne Feinstein, for God's sakes, saying, you know, you need to bring forth these articles of impeachment, okay? Because the longer that you hold back bringing these articles of impeachment, the more you hurt your impeachment process.
Exactly.
Okay, because it starts to rot on the vine, and then it just goes away. And if you remember, Chuck Schumer, Adam Schiff, Nancy Pelosi, people on the squad, were all saying there is exigent circumstances, right? Exigent circumstances. There's exigency. We must act right now because President Trump is a threat to the security of America. Well, if you are saying that you've got exigent circumstances, then why the heck are you fooling around and not bringing the articles of impeachment immediately over to the Senate? How many weeks has it been now, Lynn? Has it been three, four weeks now?
Yeah. Now, okay. Mitch McConnell has just said that he expects Nancy to produce these documents by the end of the week and that the trial will start next week. So we will see. And you mentioned Justice Roberts. I like him. I don't trust his opinion in this case.
I'm a little wary of him. Okay, listen, I think he's a nice man. I don't trust him.
Yeah.
Okay, I think he's a nice man, but I would much rather see, you know, a different Supreme Court person. But our Constitution specifically states that the jurist has to be the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court. So we will see what we will see with regards to that.
Well, let's cross the pond for a minute.
Okay.
In England, Brexit has been just such a fight for the last 3 years. People voted for it, and then it kind of like in our country, it got all blocked up with courts and with different politicians. Well, Boris Johnson just won his Brexit vote, and they now will depart Brexit on January 31st.
You know, it's so interesting. The whole Iranian thing has been really sucked all the air out of the room. And I've been kind of paying attention to the news today, and I didn't even hear that. So what did they do, bury that on page three or what?
Well, I think just that everything Trump takes the air out of the room and everything, you know. But I think this is really interesting because, you know, we were in Italy a couple of months ago, and we actually sat with some people from England, and we talked to them about Brexit, and it was really interesting to me. And they weren't necessarily for it, and they weren't necessarily against it. But what they said was the people voted for it. They need to let it go through because that's what the people voted for. And the man said he didn't vote for it, but the people voted for it. I wish our country would have that same kind of attitude. But anyway, what will happen now is that Brexit will exit the EU, and they will now have to renegotiate all of their own contracts for trade with all kinds of other people, which includes us in
right.
America.
And I think President Trump has promised Boris Johnson a wonderful trade agreement between the two countries. I think that's really going to help them. So I don't even know if you know the answer to this, but so they're going to leave the EU. Does that mean they're going to leave the EU currency, which is the euro, and they're going to go back to the pound?
Well, they still actually do have the pound there because what's interesting is I deal with people in England.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm asking.
Yeah, and I have to show their currency in EU, and I have to show it in the pound.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So they definitely do still have it. I don't know what that's going to mean. I think that there's a lot of things at this point for them to work out. They have to get new deals on everything, and goods and services, to fishing, to aviation, to medicines, to
energy is going to be
security,
a big deal.
Oil,
natural
all kinds
gas,
of things.
Everything like that.
And they can't do this in a heartbeat. It's going to take some time. Now, they have a conflict still with the EU, because the EU says that the UK won't get good access to its markets unless it agrees to alignment with them.
Yeah, but you know, the world is huge, okay?
Exactly.
And you know better than most people, because you work internationally with business. Linda, I mean, there are, you know, business opportunities throughout the world. It's not just in Europe, for God's sakes. I mean, they can do a tremendous amount of business with the United States. I think that's going to help both countries. But then, you know, there's the Asian markets. You know, there's South America. There's Mexico. You know, there's Canada. I mean, there's all sorts of alternative markets for the Brits.
Yeah.
One of the things that I think is going to be good about the Great Britain exiting the EU is they're not going to get caught up with the tremendous debt that the EU has as a result of all the immigrants that have come into the country, and these states, meaning other countries, are going bankrupt. So we already talked about the tremendous problems that Greece has. Spain is having a lot of problems. And these are EU countries.
I think that you're going to see, my personal prediction is you're going to see more countries bailing out. Because what happened when they made the EU, there was certainly some good things that happened. But what also happened was when they decided that everybody could cross everybody's borders. And
open borders,
that was
completely.
That was a terrible decision.
Oh, we saw that the last couple of years. I think we've been to Europe 3 times in the last 3 years. And every year, in other words, and we have seen this taking place little by little by little, where the countries are losing their cultural identity.
Oh, they definitely.
Oh, it's so sad to
not
see
losing.
It.
I mean, a lot of them have simply lost
right?
it.
And by the way, that's not a what's the term? You know, it's not a racist statement or a xenophobic statement or something like that. It's an actual factual statement. You know, like you go to Germany and you just don't see a lot of cultural Germany, right? And you go to Austria and you don't necessarily see a lot of cultural Austria. And we saw that in Italy. They are all the different, you know, immigrants from all the other countries, you know, Africa and way back in Eastern Europe, and you're talking about the Middle East or Eurasia, all of those coming into those countries have pretty much sucked a lot of the lifeblood culturally out of those countries, and they don't assimilate. They create countries in the different countries, just like they're doing in the United States. And that's unfortunate when a country loses their cultural identity.
Yes.
And when they try to reassert some cultural things like festivals and things like that, there's a lot of pushback. And,
yes.
and that's what I'm referring
yeah,
to. And that's
I
a
agree.
Shame.
And also a lot of these people coming from, you know, maybe third world type countries are going on the dole, and it's really hurting the people. The people are paying such extremely high taxes. So I hope that England can again, you know, create their own border and, you know, go back to making their own identity and their own rules. And that would be good for them.
And we'll see where that goes.
Yep.
I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
As former law enforcement officers, we know that your life and the lives of those you love and work with can change in an instant when you encounter an active shooter.
Unfortunately, in today's world of uncertainty, encountering an armed active shooter can have deadly consequences. That's why the key to survival is training and preparedness.
And that's why we want to invite our listeners to seriously consider taking our Response to Active Shooter training course.
Violence can happen to you anytime and anywhere and when you least expect it. Having a response and survival plan and engaging it can be the difference between life and death for you or a family member.
Our Response to Active Shooter courses are customized for the corporate, school, church, restaurant, and small business environment at a reasonable budget that fits your needs.
So don't put this life-saving training off because you don't think it will ever happen to you. We call those people victims.
Our Response to Active Shooter instructors are all nationally renowned tactical law enforcement experts who will guide you through the life-saving protocols you'll need to survive an active shooter event.
So be a victor, not a victim. Go to ResponseToActiveShooter.com to learn more today.
Remember, that's all one word, ResponseToActiveShooter.com, and be safe out there.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
I just want to totally change directions and talk about some kind of fun things.
Boy, we just filled up our evening with politics, okay? Let's do something.
Seems
fun.
Like we do that an awful lot.
Well, that's because there's so much of it going on.
Yeah, there's really a lot going on. So let's talk about some things that are ridiculous and surprising things around the world that are banned.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
So if you live in Moscow, there's the law that has been passed that you must keep your car washed, so you can be fined if you have an unkempt car.
An unkempt car in Moscow.
Yes.
Boy, I'll tell you what, it just sounds like the People's Republic of San Francisco, what kind of law that they would have there for you. Okay.
Well, you know, interesting that you should say that, because some of the Russians feel like there might be an ulterior motive here where the cops over there want to get paid off for not giving you a ticket for having an unkempt car.
Well, you know what? I would think that it would probably be far deeper than that. The collusion, Linda. Let's talk about somebody that owns a bunch of car washes in league with the government.
Well, and you know, also their weather gets to minus 20 degrees. And how does your car look good in that weather anyway?
Well, it has a sheet of ice on it because you washed your car.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so. Well, in Denmark, you cannot name your baby something like, remember when Gwyneth Paltrow named her baby Apple, or when Kim Kardashian named her child Northwest?
Or when, what's her name, the famous, Cher named her child
Chastity.
Well, no, I thought there was also one that was like moon something.
Oh, I don't know.
Okay. Anyway.
Yeah, you can't do that in
moon
Denmark.
Unit. Moon Unit. That was the name. Moon Unit.
I don't think, well, I don't know.
Was that Cher?
I think that was somebody else.
Okay.
Anyway, you can't do that because they say that they don't want the child to have a disadvantage in life.
Well, you know what? That's a law that I sort of would agree with.
You know,
kids are,
I'm with you there.
Kids are bullied all the time, and parents have to be so careful of what they name their kids.
No, I agree with you.
Okay.
I'm shocked at what some people name their kids.
All right.
In Canada, you know the little baby walkers that we used for our kids as they were growing up?
I drug my kid around. I didn't have a walker.
You didn't have a walker?
No. No, go ahead. I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
We did have walkers, Ron. Lots of walkers. And I love them, actually. But anyway, they are banned in Canada.
No, Ken, wait a minute. Are you talking about strollers? You're calling them walkers?
No, no. I'm talking about the little things that you sit the child in and they can walk all around.
Oh, yeah, we had that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody's had that.
One of my favorite ones was the one that was inflatable. It had the three donuts.
And they bounce all around.
And they remember? The kids would bounce off the walls. It didn't hurt anything. Yeah. Bounce off the furniture. That was my absolute favorite stroller device, whatever the heck you want to call it. I thought that was hilarious.
Well, in Canada, a retailer can face up to $100,000 in fines if they advertise or sell baby walkers. And they say that they've had 1,900 injuries from the walking devices from 1990 to 2002, which is 12 years. So they've had a little more than 100 injuries a year, and they've banned them through the whole country. Is that a little bit of an overreaction?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit, but I think it also has a lot to do with you got to supervise the kids.
I just was going to say,
you know,
we never had an issue.
Yeah, because we're supervising our kids.
But people would, just like anything else, people use things to put their kids somewhere, and then they can go off and do something.
Well, yeah,
and that's what they do with these.
They're using these devices as a babysitter, and that's not what they're intended to be used for. And
yeah,
as a matter of fact, if you look at the risk warning on all these different devices, it tells you you cannot use this device without supervision. It has to be parental supervision.
Well, nobody listens to that. In Greece, they have a law about wearing high heels. So in very many of the places, which actually are historical locations, you cannot wear high heels because they can damage some of the monuments, and I agree with that.
Because we've been to Greece, and we've been to some of those beautiful areas that have mosaics and stuff like Mykonos and Delos. Remember those islands? You can't. Yeah, you have to be very careful when you walk around over there because you're literally walking on history and antiquity.
I totally agree with you. In England, they play a game, and the game is called conjure cuddling, okay? And what this game is that competitors try to knock one another off of wooden blocks using one thing. And you know how the guys try to knock, kind of roll each other off on the log rolling?
Yeah, the long
hairs. This is, they try to knock them off blocks. So they use, to knock them off the blocks, a conjure eel attached to a rope. And now the eel is dead. Okay, because what happens is...
Are you talking about...
An eel.
Like the animal?
Yeah. And what happens is they catch them in their fishing nets and they end up dying.
Okay.
And they use these, the dead conger eels to knock each other. So they slap them in the face
with
the eel. Well, animal... Okay, now this is...
I'm sorry.
Tell me what's wrong with this picture.
Have you got a video I can watch?
Tell me what's wrong with this picture. Animal rights activists got involved, and they said that it was cruel. And I'm thinking...
Wait a minute, they're dead.
They're dead.
They're dead.
Who is this cruel to? I don't get it.
It might be gross, but it's not cruel.
Yeah, and how they use the game is they use it to raise money for the Royal National Lifeboat Institution. Well, now they have to use a rubber buoy kind of thing. But, I kind of think that the game must have been more fun with the eel.
I'd certainly like to watch it.
I know, that would be fun. Well, I want to know if you can guess this city. I think we've talked about it before, where they have banned gossip.
I can't. I'd never win that game. Okay, so which city is it?
Well, you really should have known this one, Ron. It's Iconzo, Colombia.
Wait a minute. I thought you said it was in the United States.
I didn't say. I said, what is the city?
Okay.
It's Iconzo, Colombia. And they have banned gossip. So lawmakers said, think before you speak, because if you break that law, you can get 4 years in prison.
No way.
Way. So anyway, in America, of course, slander can result in lawsuits, but it's certainly not,
prison.
Prison for 4 years.
Not prison.
Yeah. And there's a city in France, a little town called Le Mans, that has now forbidden soccer players from spitting. So they can't spit while they're on the field.
By the way, Le Mans is not a little town. It's a very famous town in France. And that's where the Le Mans auto race is every single year.
Well, I don't know that, Ron, because when I read this, it does say that it's a small town.
Okay.
Perhaps they have a big car race, but they also don't have any spitting soccer players. So here's a place that we've been. Remember Bond, James Bond.
Bond.
Where did he play and gamble? Was in the casino?
Oh, in Monaco.
Monte Carlo.
We've actually driven right up to the front of it, although not in a really cool car like James Bond did. But
was that thinking a little
way,
touristy bus?
And by the way, they wouldn't let us in anyway.
Well, actually, I think that they probably would, but who can't go in there? Locals. Locals cannot go in there ever since it was opened.
Are you kidding me?
The Casino de Monte Carlo.
Wow.
Prince Charles III opened it. And the reason is that they said that a truly successful casino will rob most of its customers to some degree. And they didn't want the people of Monte Carlo to suffer the pitfalls from gambling.
I'll tell you what, though. For people that have never been to Monte Carlo, it's worth a day to go and see that city, because first of all, the city's like really tiny, but I'll tell you what, you've never seen so much money in your whole life. Okay, now I haven't been to Dubai and some of these other places where there's a lot of rich people walking around, but I definitely remember that everybody walking around, especially the women, were totally lifestyles of the rich and famous.
I mean,
it was amazing, okay?
Yep, and it's the Casino de Monte Carlo, and it's in Monaco, as you said.
Right.
So, anyway, well, Valentine's is a very popular holiday in the United States. I think that they do more cards on that day than, well, actually, I think Mother's Day is the most.
Mother's Day is number one, and Valentine's Day is number two. Hallmark Cards does the research.
Yes, but Valentine's Day is banned in some countries, and it is banned in Pakistan and Saudi Arabia. Because they believe that it doesn't go along with the Muslim culture. And it is also banned in India because the Hindu organization just doesn't want it to be there for their youths. They said that they would get young people married. What? Yeah, they would get young people married if caught celebrating Valentine's Day. That just doesn't even make any sense to me, but that's what they said.
I would think in those countries, which are Muslim countries except for India, which has Muslims but also Hindus and Sikhs and Sunnis, but I think it's probably they want to avoid the public display of affection.
I think so. I think you're right there.
Okay.
Then, like you say, it doesn't go along with either religion, the teaching of their religions. So North Korea bans denim. You cannot wear denim in North Korea because they see it as a United States symbol.
I was just going to say it's because it's a U.S. symbol, right?
Yeah. So you can,
wear the little Mao jackets that those guys wear over there.
Oh, they're very unattractive to me. I don't know.
They're all the same color. You notice they're all olive drab. It's gray and olive drab, I think, are the only two colors that they have for clothes in North Korea.
Yep. Well, in Singapore, Ron, you can't chew gum. So
I know that.
You do know that.
I absolutely know that. As a matter of fact, you get whipped with a cane if you chew gum, if you spit gum out on the sidewalk.
Yeah, they don't like the spitting it on the sidewalk.
Right.
Well, now they amended the ban in 2004 to say that you can chew gum for therapeutic, dental, or nicotine addiction-related reasons, but you have to get it from a doctor. Okay.
Wow.
Yeah, or a pharmacist. So, but speaking of bans that are kind of ridiculous, in Poland, Winnie the Pooh is banned.
Now, why is that?
Because They don't like the fact that he has no pants on. I'm not kidding. And the thing is that, you know, I'm sorry, but if you've ever played with any doll without, you know, being anatomically correct,
right,
then you wouldn't be able to have any dolls, because Winnie the Pooh is just, there's like nothing there.
If you look at cartoons, none of the cartoon animals show genitalia, okay? None of them do.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm going to take over and I'm going to mention a few things, okay? So this is a fairly famous day. I'm not going to mention what day it is. But on this day, today, Linda, did you know that in 1958, Toyota and Datsun made their first appearance in the United States at the Imported Motor Car Show in Los Angeles? Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that. Okay. Why would I know that, Ron?
Another famous thing that happened on this date today, the Apple iPhone was introduced, which epitomized the next generation of mobile phones. Did you know that?
No, I did not.
Here's a biggie. The human fly, who was known as George Pauly, in 1920 attempted to climb the top floor of the Woolworth Building in New York City, which at the time was 57 floors, but they stopped him at floor number 30 and arrested him. Okay.
Why, how'd they get him off of there?
I have no idea. And finally, did you know that in 1952, the Cold War between the United States and various countries in Asia and Europe, including Russia, began?
I did not know that.
Did you know that?
Feeling pretty dumb today.
Right. And I've got one more. In 1964, on this particular day, due to U.S. problems caused at the Panama Canal Zone, which was under U.S. control and split the country of Panama in two, United States forces got into it with the Panamanians during a big demonstration there. And that's all I have to say about that.
What is your point, Dr. Martinelli?
One more famous thing that happened on this date in 19 blah, 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 blah. And that was your birthday.
Yes.
Happy birthday, sweetheart.
Thank you.
I love you.
Thank you. You are crazy.